This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is a weekly segment called A-State Connections and Created State, Making Connections That Count. In this segment, you'll hear a couple of presentations from the Created State Virtual Symposium that took place in April. These presentations are from the College of Nursing and Health Professions at Arkansas State University. First is Josh Hodges with his presentation, an analysis of adherence to prostate cancer screening guidelines within a primary care setting.
Prostate cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer that affects men in the United States, next to skin cancer. Prostate cancer is also the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in men. Prostate cancer affects men of all ethnicities and socioeconomic backgrounds. The lifetime risk of developing prostate cancer was 16%, and the lifetime risk of death was at 3.4%. There have been different opinions and much confusion surrounding PSA testing for prostate cancer. Therefore, the United States Preventive Task Force, or the USPSTF, created guidelines for PSA screening. Men 70 years of age or older have been given a grade D when it comes to PSA screening. And this grade essentially is meaning that the age group of men are not recommended to have PSA testing due to the high risk of harm over the benefits. So essentially, PSA can be increased due to a number of things other than prostate cancer, such as prostatitis, UTIs, and BPH. So the issue is, even if one of these illnesses or disease processes cause the elevation of PSA, the provider continues into treatment modalities and begins to implement these. And with this older age group of men, they are at such a higher risk for urinary incontinence, infections, bleeding, and erectile dysfunction after any of the treatment modalities. And the purpose of the study is to compare the rate at which men in the mentioned age group are still being screened, regardless of the current recommendations laid out by the USPSTF. And the objectives, the primary objective of the study is to interpret if a rural clinic in Arkansas is following the best practice recommendations on PSA screening in men 70 years of age or older set out by the USPSTF. Depending on the compliance or lack of the compliance set out by the guideline, the providers in the clinic may be able to save revenue by not ordering an excessive amount of PSA screenings if it's not indicated. This may also prevent unnecessary harms to the patients due to the risk. And the methods, the method used was a retrospective chart review. This study utilized IRB through Arkansas State University. And the study was implemented in a rural family clinic in Paragould, Arkansas. The data was collected through 50 randomly picked charts of the specified population, and the dates were January 1st, 2020 to February 28, 2020. This was the time frame in which the research was conducted. Under a population, the charts were used in the study include male patients, of course, who were 70 years of age or older. The charts were manually searched for the diagnostic test of PSA screening. Females, of course, are a total exclusion criteria, along with men under the age of 70. In the findings, the study showed that the rate of men screened who were not recommended to be screened due to their age was actually 74% at this clinic. The other 26% of men were not screened using PSA, and that actually does follow the USPSTF guidelines. So, under the discussion and action plan here, as far as following the grade D recommendations set forth by the USPSTF on the PSA screening, the clinic in Paragould has quite a bit of room for improvement. The majority of the patient population that was reviewed were being screened unnecessarily, as set forth by the USPSTF. And this may lead to a loss of revenue for the clinic and can cause preventable harms to the patient, which may then incur even more loss of revenue. Provider education and staying current on USPSTF screening recommendations is advised as part of the action plan for this clinic. And of course, education to the patient population as to why we wouldn't screen and why it's not recommended for their age group. And then, of course, a discussion about the harms versus benefits for the screening. And as far as acknowledgments, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Foster and Ms. Hadley, and have references available upon request. Thank you.
That was Josh Hodges. Next is Ashley Early with her presentation, an examination of statin therapy prescribing rates among diabetic patients between the ages of 40 and 75 with known existing cardiovascular risk.
It is estimated that there are more than 200 million people worldwide diagnosed with diabetes. Atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of morbidity and mortality for individuals with diabetes and results in an estimated $37.3 billion in cardiovascular-related spending each year. The purpose of this study is to compare the rate of diabetics prescribed statin therapy at a rural Arkansas clinic to the national average of approximately 32%. Diabetes affects the microvascular and macrovascular structures of the body. Patients diagnosed with diabetes can be up to four times more likely to develop CVD or stroke. It is for this reason that the American Diabetic Association, in conjunction with the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association, have recommended clinical guidelines to treat these patients appropriately. The results will help providers at the rural clinic gain insight into their performance as it compares to the national average. The rural clinic will then have a baseline performance level to use for future quality improvement goals. This study was conducted at a rural clinic in Arkansas, and a retrospective chart review was conducted of 50 charts using the clinic's EMR. IRB approval was obtained through ASU, and a data collection tool along with simple mathematical calculations were utilized to determine the percentage of patients receiving statin therapy. Inclusion criteria for this study included both male and female patients between the ages of 40 and 75 years of age with a diagnosis of diabetes using the ICD-10 code E11.9. The findings of this study found that the rate of treatment of statin therapy among the qualifying diabetic patients at the rural Arkansas clinic was 86%. In comparison, the national rate of statin prescription to qualifying diabetics was approximately 32%. The 86% rate of statin prescription to qualifying diabetics at this rural Arkansas clinic was significantly better. Hyperlipidemia is a disorder that affects more than 71 million people in America. These patients are at an increased risk for heart disease, which is the leading cause of death in the United States. This is a diagnosis that can be managed in the primary care setting, and diabetics are 2 to 4 times more likely to die from heart disease. This is why the recommendations put forth by the American Diabetic Association, the American College of Cardiology, and the American Heart Association should be considered. It is evident in the research that the initiation of statin therapy to those at risk for the development of CVD can regress hyperlipidemia and help to prevent a life-threatening cardiovascular event. The study of coronary atheroma by intravascular ultrasound, effect of rivastatin versus atorvastatin, or SATURN, was explicitly designed to look at patients with existing atherosclerosis. Aggressive LDL cholesterol lowering with high-intensity statin therapy can regress coronary atheroma and reduce the incidence of cardiovascular events in patients with established CAD. Primary care providers should consider the recommendations regarding statin therapy and consider prescribing to the appropriate patients to help prevent major cardiovascular events.
And that was Ashley Early. The next presentation is from Bridget Fender with her presentation titled, A Local Family Practice Clinic's Colorectal Cancer Screening Rates versus the National Average of 67.3%.
Colorectal cancer affects both men and women. It is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States and is the third most common cancer in men and women. The lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer is 1 in 22 for men and 1 in 24 for women. It is recommended by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force that screening for colorectal cancer should begin at age 50 years and continue until the age of 75. Colorectal cancer screenings are a very easy way to detect colorectal cancer in the early stages and lessens the statistics of new cases and helps prevent death. The purpose of this study is to compare the colorectal screening rates of patients aged 50 to 75 in a local clinic in Paragould, Arkansas, to the national average of 67.3%. IRB approval was granted through Arkansas State University. The study was performed using a randomized retrospective chart review. 50 charts were obtained from patients seen between January 1, 2019 through November 18, 2019. A data collection tool was utilized to include age, race, gender, and the ICD-10 code Z12.11. Inclusion criteria included patients greater than or equal to 50 years of age and less than or equal to 75 years of age. Exclusion criteria included patients less than 50 years of age and greater than 75 years of age. Data analysis of 50 patient charts reviewed resulted in 31 patients were screened for colorectal cancer, which equates to 62%. This is below the national average of 67.3%. This study reveals that a local family practice clinic falls just below the national average of 67.3% for colorectal cancer screenings. Every patient at every visit should be evaluated for need of screening. Recommendations from primary care providers play an instrumental role in patients' decisions to be screened for colorectal cancer.
And that was Bridget Fender. Finally, Mary Fisher, with her presentation titled, Adherence to Obesity Screening Within Primary Care in Accordance to U.S. Task Force Guidelines.
My research was based off the United States Task Force Guidelines for Obesity Screening. The U.S. Task Force recommends screening all adults for obesity. Clinicians should offer or refer patients with a BMI of 30 or higher to intensive multi-component behavioral interventions. I chose obesity because obesity has a great effect on morbidity and mortality because it puts people at risk for heart disease, diabetes, stroke, and certain types of cancer. It has increased significantly over the years and is the cause of many health complications. In the United States, obesity affects 38% of the general population. In the state of Missouri, where my research was conducted, obesity affects greater than 35% of people. Many physicians are failing to document obesity as a diagnosis on a patient's chart and therefore not educating patients on their need for weight management. In a study produced by Fink, the results display that 65% of patients with a BMI of 30 or greater were not accompanied with a diagnosis of obesity in the problem list. And with obesity rates rising, healthcare providers need to be educating patients on obesity and making the proper referrals if needed to get these patients help. In recent research, only about 18% of obese patients receive counseling for weight reduction. According to LeBlanc, surveys have indicated that only 38 to 66% of overweight or obese patients have received a diagnosis of overweight or obesity, and less than half of obese patients report that their physician has advised them to lose weight or provided specific information about how to lose the weight. The purpose of my study is to determine the average utilization rate of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendation on screening obesity patients compared to the national average of 18%. This pie chart represents the national average. 18% represents the patients that are being educated or referred, and the larger section of 82% represents those patients who are not being educated or referred, 18%. The primary objective of the study is to compare the utilization rate of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force guidelines in the rural clinic with the rate of use among practitioners across the nation. By determining whether the use of this guideline for obesity in a rural clinic is better or worse than the national average, providers at this clinic will gain insight into their performance and have a baseline performance level to use in order to set goals for future improvement. This descriptive study was conducted at a rural Missouri clinic through a retrospective chart review of 50 electronic medical records. Simple mathematical calculations were utilized to determine the percentage of patients who were educated in accordance to the U.S. Task Force guidelines on obesity. My inclusion criteria included male and female patients ages 18 to 65 with the diagnosis of obesity, and my exclusion criteria were age less than 18 or older than 65 and no diagnosis of obesity. The results of my study revealed that 100% of patients age 18 to 65 are being screened for obesity, but only 32% were provided education or referred for weight management. The pie chart represents this clinic's adherence to the task force guidelines for obesity, where 32% are being educated or referred, and the 68% are not being educated or referred. In comparison to the national average at 18% of adherence to the United States Task Force guidelines for obesity, this rural clinic's rate is higher at 32%. And the graph represents that the rural clinic's adherence rate is 32%, which is much higher than the national average at 18%. When considering the guidelines for obesity screening and management set in place by the task force, practitioners at the clinic involved in the study were found to be better than the national average of 18%. Based on the evidence of available research, providing patients with education and appropriate referral for weight management will decrease our obesity rates in the U.S., therefore decreasing patients' risk factors for heart disease, diabetes, stroke, etc. So more than 60% of these patients are not receiving education or referral on weight management. So there is still significant room for improvement on following these guidelines. So based on these results, it is important for healthcare providers to be mindful of these guidelines set in place and to start educating these patients diagnosed with obesity.
And that was Mary Fisher. To hear more of the Created State podcast, you can subscribe to the Created State podcast at the Created State podcast page on KASU.org. It's also available on Apple Podcasts or Google Play, Spotify, wherever you have podcasts, wherever your podcast is that you get them, you can find the Created State podcast. Also, take KASU with you wherever you go, and you can listen to podcast segments on the new KASU app. Just go to iTunes or Google Play, and you can type in the search term KASU app, and you can download the new app for free. And please tell others about the Created State podcast. Also, leave us a review. We would love to hear from you. And those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts allow us to be able to get this podcast out to more listeners. So thank you for your time. This is A-State Connections and Created State on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves.